Welcome to What's the Big Idea? I'm your host, Dan Carney. My teaching career thus far has been about 13 years, and in those 13 years, I've seen a steady rise in what I don't think is an exaggeration to call a national mania over the idea of STEM education. That's science, technology, engineering, and math. My own research tells me that the term first appeared in the mid-2000s, and boy, did it take off. Today, I think it would be hard to argue that STEM is not seen as the most vital part of our education system. Indeed, recent polls have shown that, quote, any STEM subject, close quote, wins out over everything else when Americans are asked what subjects need more emphasis. And this, I believe, is a problem. Let me just say this right from the top. I like math. I am a history person. I teach history, but I liked math in school. I like science. I'm a huge tech person. Nothing about this commentary is to diminish any of these areas of study or to suggest that they are less important than other subjects. I just simply want to say they're not more important. Especially in this moment, they're not more important. With civil discourse eroding, media literacy barely getting off the ground, and the art of political negotiation seemingly collapsed, we can't simply turn our lonely eyes towards STEM and imagine we're going to tech our way out of the world's problems. But we kind of get that message, don't we? We hear from industry leaders that STEM jobs are the jobs of the future, that they're in shortage, and oh, by the way, will the education system get its ass in gear and prepare students better? Meanwhile, tech and math nerds are lionized and idolized, even as some of them take part in some pretty questionable activity and push some pretty gross ideas. And amidst all this, in the crush of the college admissions frenzy, higher-level math promises to be our gateway to a better life. Actually, let's start with that last one. I don't think it's unfair to say that many students measure their academic self-worth based on which math class they are in. Yet, even as students are told about growth mindset and the importance of genuinely understanding math and to embrace the beauty of the subject, well, when the rubber hits the road, higher math is held up as a kind of gold standard. And when I say higher level, what I mean is abstract courses like calculus and trigonometry. More practical mathematics, which could include things like statistics and financial literacy or just general numeracy, are still seen as somehow lesser and not as rigorous. But if you actually look at admissions in high schools and colleges, you find very little evidence that lots of high-level math is necessary. Yes, elite universities like the Ivy Plus, they expect 4 years of math, usually at the highest possible level. Elite public institutions? Not so much. And this is to say nothing of all the other schools in this country that can be a perfect fit for many students. A couple of examples. There's an elite private high school here in Southern California that offers a variety of magnet programs, totaling 14 different possible tracks students can apply into. Yet how many of those require high-level math in middle school, meaning geometry? 2. Of the 8 colleges that undergrads can apply into at the University of Michigan, how many even require 4 years of math? 2, engineering and nursing. And look, I'm not arguing that high-level abstract math is somehow useless or a waste of time, but I am arguing that while it's useful to a small subset of the student population, it's held up to all as a kind of gatekeeper, and for students and their parents, a symbol of success and self-esteem. Part of our obsession with STEM, especially math, is also cultural. In many parts of America, parents simply don't want their children learning about so-called controversial topics like non-whitewashed history, or reading diverse literature, or exploring the science of climate change. And so they think that a back-to-basics, quote-unquote, objective subject like math is safe. This is the result of years of culture war propaganda from politicians and conservative activists that has left subjects like history reeling. Reeling culturally, and reeling financially. According to the Center for Strategic and International Studies, for every $54 spent in federal investment per enrolled school child in STEM, you get 5 cents per child for civics. cents, not dollars. And this disparity holds true in state and local spending. Now, part of this is surely that STEM programs are expensive. Maintaining a viable science department, for example, is much more pricey than an English department. But come on. It says a lot about our nation's priorities. And looking at some of our biggest problems that humanity faces, climate change, sectarian violence, political paralysis, creeping authoritarianism, it's clear that while technology can, has, and always will play a vital role, it's foolish to think that technology will save us. We can't simply tech our way out of our problems. Many of the issues we face are fundamentally human problems that beg us increased human understanding, diverse viewpoints, cultures and history, empathy, and not to mention persuasion, compromise, writing with purpose and clarity, using evidence, literacy, critical thinking. And yes, I know that many of these skills can also be taught in STEM classes, but they are taught in a particular way in the humanities and arts. Finally, there's money, and the narrative around STEM as it pertains to the workforce. Not only are STEM jobs such as computer programmer, medical engineer, and information analyst routinely highlighted as prime careers, there's also, we're told, a perpetual shortage in these fields. This combination has helped spur a virtual cottage industry of STEM-related educational programs, textbooks, curriculum packages, and an entire wing of teachers pay teachers. Schools, the logic goes, had best get kids prepared for the market and all those high-paying jobs. The problem is it's not an accurate reflection of the job market. As Neil Krauss argues in The Fantasy Economy, since the 1980s we've been sold a neoliberal story about the skilled worker shortage and the faults of education. If only we had more STEM workers, they tell us. This is actually a narrative that supports elites by allowing them to suppress wages, demand more foreign worker visas, and blame K-12 schooling. Schools, in this story, are constantly underserving students by not having them career-ready. But Ron Hira writes, STEM, like all other fields, has some shortages and some surpluses. Thus, the main stakeholder groups, he writes, steering these conversations, like businesses, universities, and government research agencies, benefit from the push to train and import more STEM workers. In other words, the story we're being sold about STEM jobs is coming from the very people who will benefit from more of those workers. Final thoughts here. Artificial intelligence promises to upend the world in a multitude of ways, education certainly being one of them. I have my own thoughts as to how far we'll see a true revolution in teaching and learning due to AI, but I think it's fair to say that, if anything, AI will tilt our priorities and spending more in the direction of STEM. And while AI is, on the surface, a tech story, its implications cut to the heart of what it means to maintain a democratic society. Preparing students to live in a world where basic questions of truth are on the line, where the meaning of work is becoming harder to define, and human divisions are increasingly exacerbated and exploited, well, that requires an education based on common humanity. An overemphasis on STEM, I fear, makes that harder.